It was 2001, yesterday, that Pamela and I got on a plane on that morning and flew to San Angelo, Texas, because we had gotten a call just the night before that my mother, who had been diagnosed just 3 weeks earlier with colon cancer and some other types of cancer as well, had in hospice care finally slipped into some kind of a coma state, and Dad didn't think she was going to make it. So Pamela and I got on a American Eagle flight out of DFW and flew to San Angelo, Texas, where Mom and Dad were living. And I'll never forget that drive from the airport where Dad picked us up. He had left my sister with my mother. And it just seemed that Dad just drove just so awfully slow. I remember almost trying to push him to get to the house. We finally got there, and I walked in to the house and went immediately to the bedroom where my mother was, Pamela at my side. She was of course drugged and just barely conscious, but not very. I remember reaching and holding her hand, and I remember my sister Marty saying to her mom, "Jeff's here," and she just barely turned her head. And my sister walked outside of the room to go and say something to someone who was outside the room, and I began to see that Mom was slipping away. And I called to my sister Marty, who ran back into the room, and there on November 8th, 2001, my mother slipped into eternity. I remember that for weeks, ever since we had received the diagnosis, the doctor told us that she had 6 months to live. She was dead 3 weeks later. The other kind of cancer, of course, you can probably guess, in addition to colon cancer, it was pancreatic. And I remember just having prayed so intensely those 3 weeks that she would be healed, that she would recover. And, you know, it just didn't happen. And you know what? For a while, I just stopped praying. You know what? I just couldn't find the confidence. I just couldn't find the faith. I just couldn't find the bravado inside myself that it actually made any difference to pray. Because here God had placed me into a circumstance of life, and I had tried to be Christian, I had tried to be a good child of God, and you know what, it just didn't make any difference, so why even bother anymore? I don't know if anybody here has ever been in a place like that. I do know that some of you are struggling with extreme difficulties in your homes. I know a little bit about some of your lives, and I know that some of you have been enduring terrible trials in your homes and in your relationships with other people, and that some of you have borne griefs that I couldn't even imagine bearing. I do know that today, 52% of Americans are extremely happy with what happened on Tuesday, and 46% of Americans are extremely disappointed with what happened on Tuesday. I don't know where you fall in that breakup, and but I do know that there is disappointment in our nation, and there's disappointment in this room, and there are disappointments in our families for all sorts of different reasons. You know, it was very, very difficult for my sister, because not only did my mother pass away on November 8th, but it also happens to be my sister's birthday. So last night I called my sister to wish her a happy birthday, and of course it's a very, very bitter and sweet time. I imagine you all have bitter, sweet days as well. I want us to go to a chapter this morning, because whether your disappointment is over something political, or whether your joy is over something political, whether your disappointment is over something in your family, or your joy is over something in your family, I want us to move away a little bit this morning from just being infatuated with whether we are happy or whether we are sad, to looking at something that makes us distinctively Christian, regardless of what the circumstance is. And in order to do that, I'm going to ask your forgiveness this morning. I want to leave our discussion of the book of Genesis, and I'd like us to go to the Gospel of John. Would you come with me to the 11th chapter of John's Gospel, where we look together at a story with which we're very familiar, but a story that really comes up, and if we look at it carefully, hits us like a 2x4 between the eyes. Because it's not the story that we're expecting. And for many of us, it's not the Jesus that we're expecting. Many of us come into Christianity expecting a particular type of Jesus, a particular type of God, and we build our hopes and our dreams built upon certain visions of God and of Jesus. But we're going to see in John chapter 11 that the Jesus that we see may not be the Jesus that you particularly want to see. It's the story of course, the resurrection of Lazarus. Let's begin reading together in verse 1 of John chapter 11. Moving beyond happiness and sadness, moving beyond joy and grief, to embracing a distinctively Christian attitude towards the way God deals with us, whether he lifts us up to a mountaintop or whether sometimes he casts us down into a valley. John chapter 11. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus. Now listen here. Lord, the one you love is sick. Two things I want you to get from here. One, I want you to see that Jesus loved Lazarus. And the text goes to some extent to let you see that. Notice it's not just, Lord, Lazarus is sick, but the sisters send word, and the word they send is, Lord, the one you love is sick. And so John wants you to see that apparently Jesus had a particular affection for Lazarus and for his two sisters. Lord, the one you love is sick. So Jesus loved him, but I also want you to see that he got word that Lazarus was sick. He got a phone call. He got a telegram. He was alerted to the fact that Jesus, that Lazarus, his friend, the one he loved, was sick. Verse 4. When he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Would you just pause there with me for a moment? You see what Jesus is saying about the sickness of one he loves, about the illness and the suffering of someone he loves. He says that the sickness was for God's glory. In other words, Jesus has either allowed, God has either allowed or caused this sickness within Lazarus so that God can be glorified. In other words, Lazarus is being employed by God in order to glorify God. Now, just hold on to that thought for a moment as we continue to move through the chapter. Verse 5. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Isn't that interesting? That's now the second time in just 5 verses that John has made sure that you know, either through the testimony of Mary and Martha and the message that they sent to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. Either that you know it through the testimony of his sisters or through John's own testimony. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. John wants you to know that Jesus really loves these people. Jesus really loves Lazarus. He really loves Martha. He really loves Mary. And so the question here is not, Jesus, do you love them? We already know the answer to that question. Jesus loves Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. We've seen it twice. And we continue to read. Now notice verse 6. Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. You know what? Those are some of the most bitter words in the entire biblical text. Remember, Jesus loved Lazarus. We've seen it twice. Yet when Lazarus heard that when Jesus heard that Lazarus was sick, Jesus stayed where he was 2 more days. In other words, Jesus didn't do a darn thing about it. Jesus didn't run to his side to comfort him. Jesus didn't run to his side to hold his hand. Jesus didn't run to the sisters to see if there's anything that he could do to help them as they tended for him. Jesus didn't send a comforting word. Do you see how John puts it right smack dab in front of us so we can't run from it? When Jesus heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Yes, sirree, Bob. That's the kind of friend I want. You know, I hope that if I'm ever sick and I send word to someone in this class, you know what I hope you all do? I hope you all just stay where you are. If I ever end up in the hospital, I hope none of you ever come visit me. Because that's the kind of friends I want. I want friends who, when they get word that I'm suffering and I'm grieving, you all just stay right where you are and continue about your duties and don't pay any attention to me. Because that's exactly what Jesus did. Jesus got news that Lazarus was sick. And remember, he loves him. And despite the fact that the one he loved was sick, and despite the fact that his two sisters were worried about him, Jesus stayed where he was 2 more days. Now look what happens. Then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you are going back there?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light." After he said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Now, the disciples just aren't known for their brilliance right now. It reminds me of an old thing that I used to do when I was a child. I remember we, of course, lived overseas, so every summer we would come back to visit my grandma and my grandpa in Lafayette, Louisiana, And of course, Saturday morning was a wonderful time. I would run from my bedroom in my pajamas with the little drop down bottom. Y'all remember the little button up drop down bottoms? And I would run from my bedroom to the living room where Grandma and Grandpa's television set was, and I would sit down and I would watch Saturday morning cartoons right there in my drop down bottom pajamas. All right, I still do it. But I remember my favorite cartoon was this one, I can't remember the name of it, this huge white dog with huge ears and these huge drooping jowls, and he was the dumbest thing on the planet Earth. Something would happen or someone would fly by. Remember what he used to do? He'd shake his head and he'd say, "Which way did they go? Which way did they go?" And this is exactly how I see the disciples here. They just don't get anything. Jesus is speaking metaphorically about the fact that Lazarus has just died, and they think he's taking a nap, and they just don't get it. So Jesus, verse 13, Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he had to tell them plainly, because they weren't that bright, Lazarus is dead. Now, have you all stayed up with me in the story so far? Remember, Lazarus loved, or was loved, by Jesus. Jesus loved Lazarus. And yet when he hears that Lazarus is sick, he stays where he was 2 more days, and he lets Lazarus die. Y'all got the point of the story? He let the one that he loves die. Why don't we all stand up and sing, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." What a friend we have in Jesus, all our griefs to bear. Yeah, right. How many of you signed up to be treated by Jesus the way that Jesus is treating Lazarus? How many of you have understood in your lives that the ones that Jesus loves, he treats like he treated Lazarus and Mary and Martha? Are you getting the point here? That Jesus will allow the ones that he loves to endure unimaginable grief, sorrow, and hardship. He let Lazarus die, and he is letting Mary and Martha grieve. Although he knew about it, although he could have done something about it, he lets Lazarus die, and he lets Mary and Martha crumble into the unimaginable grief of their brother's death. Are you okay with being in a relationship with a Jesus that will relate to you that way? Because, dearly beloved, we need to move beyond simply being concerned with whether we are happy or whether we are sad, whether we are winners or whether we are losers. And we need to understand something that's going on in the bigger picture here. Notice the next line. Verse 14. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead." Now notice the audacity of these next words. "And yet for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Do you see how things are escalating in this story? It's not just enough that When Jesus heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed where he was 2 more days. That's not enough. But when he hears Lazarus is dead, he stays where he was 2 more days and he lets him die. That's the second thing. And now we get this on top of it. Jesus turns to his disciples and he says, you know what? I'm glad that Lazarus is dead. I'm glad I wasn't there. I'm glad I didn't save him. I'm glad I didn't heal him. Did you get the reason? So that you may believe. Dear friends, we need to move beyond happiness and sadness between being concerned with whether we are winners or losers. And we need to understand something about God here. That God is less concerned with a lot of things in our life. And he is most concerned with the fact of whether or not you and I are growing in faith. And he will orchestrate things in our lives. He will allow us to endure things in our lives. Sadness will come in. Grief will come in. Sickness will come in. Hardship will come in. Struggle will come in. We will be losers. Sometimes we will be winners. Sometimes we will be happy, sometimes we will be sad, but ultimately God is driving us to one ultimate end, to increase our faith, to move us from unbelief to belief. And it's amazing what God will orchestrate in our life and what he will allow us to endure in order to move us from unbelief to belief. I don't know what torments you're going through, but if you're anything like me, I'll bet there are times in your life when you fall on your knees or on your face and you cry out to God and you say, why in the world are you letting me go through this? I thought you loved me. You know, if you really loved me, God, you would alleviate me of this pressure. I'm your child. You promised to lift me up, but you promised to care for me. So, God, why is it that this burden is continually upon my shoulders? 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, 3 weeks, 6 months. Jesus is concerned with doing something with the faith of his followers. Notice what happens next. Then Thomas, called Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, let us go that we may die with him. A little bit of a bravado there. Remember what they were saying just a few minutes ago? Do you really want to go to that city? Because just a little while ago they were trying to stone you to death there. Now they've got this bravery going. On his arrival, verse 17, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Mary and Martha to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Hear what she's saying? Let me put it in a little bit more common terms here. Where were you? Why didn't you show up? Why did you stay where you were 2 more days? What's going on here? I prayed to you. I cried out to you. I called to you. I don't know how many times I requested the same thing from you. If you had acted, this wouldn't have happened. If you had been here, he wouldn't have died. Where in the living daylights were you, Jesus? But notice what she says next. Notice this amazing, amazing faith. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. You see, here is this amazing woman of faith. And it is quite startling. In the Gospels, It is surprising the number of times that the males are shown to be the ones who are faithless, and the women come forward as the individuals of remarkable faith. For instance, Zechariah versus the Virgin Mary. Zechariah has no faith and ends up dumb. The Virgin Mary ends up this little girl with amazing faith. At the resurrection of Jesus Christ, there isn't a male disciple to be found, because at the death of Jesus Christ, they all went into hiding. Who's at the tomb? The women. The women are there, and these are the ones who actually get to see the resurrection, hear the testimony of the resurrection, and so these women are sent to tell the males that the resurrection has taken place. And here again, you see the amazing faith of this woman. She says, even right now, God will do for you whatever you ask. Even though my brother is dead, and even though you weren't here to heal him, I know that you can still take care of it. She had something I didn't have. For a couple of weeks, I just stopped praying. Didn't do any good. Why bother? Why go through the spiritual discipline of prayer? Didn't work. It's amazing. This woman has been suffering for 6 days, and she still has the faith of a rock. You see, Jesus is really concerned with the degree of your faith. Of course, we know how the story goes on. He resurrects Lazarus. Let's go down to verse 38 and see what takes place here. But before we get to verse 38, just notice verse 33. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." That's now the third time. But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" That's the question. Jesus, you're really selective, aren't you? You healed a blind man over here, but you didn't keep the one that you love from dying. So, Jesus, how deep really is your love? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, "the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he had been there 4 days. I actually prefer the reading of the King James at this point. "But Lord, he stinketh." It gets the point across. He's been in the tomb for 4 days. He is so dead that he is decayed, and the body reeks of decay. That's how really dead Lazarus was. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Did you catch verse 42? "That they may believe that you sent me." Here's the story of Lazarus. The story of Lazarus is something that Jesus allows to happen, that God orchestrates in order to bring the disciples and the crowds that are watching to faith, to increase their faith, to show them the power of God in a way in which they would not have seen the power of God if Lazarus hadn't died, if Mary and Martha hadn't had suffered. if Lazarus had just been healed of his sickness, if Mary and Martha had never been allowed to go into the depths of their horrific grief, faith would not have increased. Faith would not have happened in the way in which God was designing it to happen. Oh, and something else wouldn't have happened. You remember what was said back up at the beginning of the letter of the story, verse 4? When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." In other words, if Jesus had arrived within those 2 days and healed Lazarus, God would not have been glorified in the way in which God intended to glorify himself and his Son. Here are the 2 points of the story of the resurrection of Lazarus. Yes, Jesus is able to raise the dead. And a day is coming in the future when Jesus will yell to everybody who is in their graves, as we discussed last week, "Come out," and everybody who is in the graves will come out to life. Yes, that is going to happen. The resurrection is true, and Jesus has the power to do it. But before that day of resurrection, Jesus is going to allow the ones that he loves sometimes to experience unimaginable sorrow and hardship and suffering. For 2 reasons. To help those who are enduring it to grow in faith. And those who are watching it to grow in faith. And secondly, he will allow us to endure sometimes unimaginable grief and hardship and sorrow and struggle in order to glorify himself in ways in which we could never orchestrate if our own lives were left up to us. And so here are the questions I need to ask you this morning. Regardless of whether you're a winner or a loser, regardless of whether you're happy or sad, regardless of whether you've been triumphalistic or whether you've been defeated, will you allow your life to become something more than just a sought-after pattern of triumphs? Will you begin to allow your life to be a life of faith where you recognize that God deeply, deeply, deeply and unendingly adores and loves you? And that when he allows struggles and difficulties to enter your life, that this is not a negation of his adoration and his affection for you, but it's an opportunity for you to grow in faith, for others who are witnessing what is going on in your life to grow in faith, and for God to glorify himself in ways in which he would not have been glorified had he not allowed those things to come upon you. Sometimes God moves us like pieces on a chessboard in moves that we would never have done, in which we would think are completely ridiculous, stupid moves that God has not carefully thought out. Boy, God, you weren't thinking 3 moves ahead in that one. You're going to lose this chess game for sure. But sometimes God moves us as pieces on a chessboard and positions us in a place where we will be taken by the other person's piece. And where it looks as though God doesn't love us, and where it looks as though we've just lost, but in which in reality, he has positioned us with the opportunity to grow in faith in ways in which we never would have otherwise, and has set and positioned himself to be glorified in ways in which he would not have been otherwise. Will you orchestrate your life around 2 things? Not whether you're winning or losing. Not whether you're happy or sad. But around whether or not you're growing in faith and others are growing in faith, and whether or not God is being glorified in your experiences. So talk to me. what does the Christian whose life is gathered and defined by belief and the glorification of God, what does that life look like? Maybe you'd like to tell me ways in which you've seen others who have helped increase the faith of others, have glorified God in unexpected ways, or maybe you'd like to tell me some personal stories, or maybe you just like to speak to us ideologically. What does that life look like that is oriented around growing in faith and glorifying God? Yeah.
Two of my favorite verses are James, consider pure joy, my brothers, when faith trials many times, because you know that the testing your faith develops perseverance. But the next one, which is, I think, a little what we're talking about, perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete. My life means that. I always remember it's like it seems like you almost have to go through that trial. I think all of us would say we learn a lot more in the valley than in the peak.
Yeah.
But that until you're being tested, you know, I've not been in the military like Brian back there, but I was talking to my father-in-law who was a World War II guy. You put down that landing craft, predicting the guy who will be the hero, the guy who will be the top.
Yeah.
All have the same training, but until you're actually tested, you don't really know. So to me, it's always, how am I going to act in that valley? How will people look at it that can really define who you are?
Yeah, that is so good. That is so good. That it's through trial that we are manifested as who we are, and it's through trial that we actually build the muscles of faith. When you've got to walk up the mountain, you build a lot more muscles than you do walking down it. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Living the Christian life is kind of like the Grand Canyon. I was watching a special with Pamela on the Grand Canyon this weekend. The park ranger said, you know what, when you go to most places, you usually start by ascending, right? But not at the Grand Canyon. At the Grand Canyon, you start by descending. And it's so easy, right? Going down to the bottom of the canyon is so easy. Everybody wants to do that. But it's when you get to the bottom of the canyon, you realize that dinner and bed are at the top of the canyon, that you got to turn around and, Lord have mercy, what stands in front of you? This huge upward climb. A lot of people get into the Christian life and into a relationship with God because they think that it's like going downhill. But God's got other things planned for us. Sometimes God allows us to go downhill because what He really wants to accomplish in our life takes place as we go back up. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
That passage
also says, when. That's true. Yeah. You know, I know y'all come in here and you all are a bunch of happy and comfortable people to be around. But I know a few secrets about some of you. I know that some of you try real hard to smile in here on Sunday mornings, because I know what you're going through throughout the week. And I appreciate your smiles, and they comfort us and they strengthen us. But, you know, I want you to know that what you all are enduring through the week, the hardships and the grief, the difficulties, are just as authentically a part of what God is doing in your life as the smile He lets you put on before you come in here every Sunday morning.
Enlighten her and bring her to salvation, which then proceeded as I was going through my anguish. Her sweet husband, who was watching from a distance, said to his wife one night, "I don't know about this God that Cheryl worships, but I have never seen such strength." And he proceeded in that next year from the faith, because he had watched how my God had guided me through my suffering.
Isn't that amazing? Good.
Never underestimate how God is wanting to be glorified.
Thank you for that witness. Let's pray together. Father, what you have done for many in this room through what you have allowed us to endure, the anguish and the torment, the struggle and the sadness, for the way in which you have increased our faith and brought others to faith, and the way in which you have glorified yourself, please receive our thanks. And as we face the remaining years of our life in which you may allow us to go through other things which right now we cannot even think of, would you strengthen us as men and women of faith, and would you help us to be your children who allow ourselves to be used by you in ways which will glorify you in ways that we cannot even imagine. Help us to be of comfort to each other as we grieve and as we struggle. Help us to mourn with those who mourn. Help us to rejoice with those who rejoice. We ask for the power of your Spirit. In Jesus' name, amen.